Hi, everybody. This is Unredacted Town Hall VIP podcast for you special folks. And what a great what a great time it is. It's really an amazing time to be alive. Let me sum it up. I think we're winning. Okay. I think we're ahead of where I even expected to be. And I'm going to write about it next week on Town Hall, or actually, you know, this week, I guess, you know, our VIP column, the fog of war and friction and how things have slowed down. So you can check that out, about why things slow down, but things do slow down. Things get slower, things get tighter, things get worse as you go along. As things accumulate and build up, it slows your momentum. You got to understand that, and you've got to fight that. But nothing goes on forever. Now, are we at the point where we're slowed and stopped? No, we're not. I think we're doing fairly well on all fronts. There's a lot of lawfare crap out there. All these resistance judges, of course, Justice Roberts is very reluctant to rein them in. He wants to get like a more orderly process rather than the procedural insanity that we've been seeing. But of course, the problem with that is the resistance judges want exactly the opposite. They like this chaos, right? They don't want an orderly process. They don't want substantive rational behavior, because substantively this stuff is crazy. A lot of these orders are just insane. They don't mean anything. Okay. They're just an excuse to stop Trump for a little while, and maybe a long while if no higher court jumps in. But they're not, you know, don't get the idea that these are good law. They're not good law. They don't represent the law. They don't represent what the law is, and everybody knows it. So by tolerating it and pretending that the procedural chaos where you're doing, you know, temporary restraining orders that instead of doing what a TRO is supposed to do, which is hold everything in place, actually start ordering people to do something. Now, that's called an injunction. It's different. Okay. You can't put an injunction in till you have a hearing. You put a TRO down to hold everything until you can hold a hearing to do an injunction, right? You see a process? It makes sense. So what these resistance judges are doing is using TROs effectively as injunctions to get around having to actually do the hearings. The other little trick is a TRO is not typically appealable. An injunction is, right? So a TRO, because it's only like 4 or 5 days usually, that's not supposed to be appealable, right? Okay, we can hold everything, you know, we just assume we can hold everything for 4 or 5 days. And then there'll be an injunction, and if you want to appeal from that, you can. So they exploit this by knowingly doing things that are not procedurally correct, right? And substantively, at the same time, they ignore things like standing. Has the person bringing the lawsuit, asking for the order, suffered a cognizable, particularized injury? Okay. Standing is important. You can't just sue because you think something's wrong. You have to suffer a particularized injury to yourself, right? And that's important. That screens out a heck of a lot of cases. You know, many, you know, for instance, I can't sue because somebody hits your car, right? I don't have standing. You have standing. I don't have standing. These courts ignore that. So you get things like, you know, unions suing so that DOGE can't look at Social Security numbers. All right. How has the union suffered a particularized injury because DOGE is looking at Social Security numbers, assuming there's some sort of injury that comes from looking at Social Security numbers? Well, we're just going to hand wave that away. Well, that's a problem, right? That's a pretty big problem. Resistance judges don't care. They don't care about the procedure. They don't care about the substance. And when you don't care about procedure or substance, okay, you don't have a system. You don't have norms to restore, which is what John Roberts wants to do. He desperately wants to get back the norms of guardrails, and he won't do it the only possible way there is to restore norms and guardrails, which is to punish the people who break the norms and bulldoze the guardrails, right? But that requires you not do normal things because they're not doing normal things. Okay, this is the soft conservative typical thing. Well, I don't want to stoop to their level. If we do it, we just validate what they're doing. No, they've changed the rules. If you want them to change back, you have to operate under the changed rules to make them suffer sufficiently so that they stop doing this crap. And guys like Roberts don't want to hear that. These guys are so desperate for normality, they kind of close their eyes real tight, put their fingers in their ears and go, no, 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 I can't hear you, I can't hear you, I can't hear you, at the people who are destroying what they want to preserve. Okay? Remember the Vietnam guy who said, well, now we have to destroy this village to save it. Yeah. If the communists take over the village, you've got to burn it down. Yes, you're absolutely correct. It only sounds crazy if you're stupid, okay? If you're a dumb person who doesn't understand how things work. If you want a certain system, you have to force other people to play by those rules. And sometimes the way you force them is not by using the rules you want to make effective again. Okay? It's generally wrong to punch people, right? Violence is generally wrong to get something done. It's also absolutely necessary. If the other guy's using violence, you're going to use violence too to force him to not use violence. Well, it doesn't make any sense. We execute somebody to show murder is wrong. Actually, it makes a ton of sense. It makes absolute sense. They shot some asshole in South Carolina, beat a couple of people to death with a baseball bat the other day. They shot him. Great. I don't understand people who are like, well, you know, how can we say it's wrong when we're doing the same thing? Okay, first of all, if you can't distinguish between what a criminal does and what a justice system does, you are either stupid or you think I'm stupid. And if you are stupid, I don't want to talk to you. And if you think I'm stupid, newsflash, I'm not. Okay? This childish view of the world, which is like embraces cliches in place of actual thought, is pretty damn annoying. And it's pretty damn dangerous. It's the main weapon system against Donald Trump. Donald Trump's a dictator. Okay, well, Donald Trump's a lot of things. Not a dictator. First of all, he's not dictating anything. To the extent he's exercising power, he's exercising powers under Article 2 of the Constitution. You have a right to go to court and challenge him if you think he's exceeding his powers. But he's not. He's allowed to do things. He won the elections. Who was it? Oh, yeah, Barack Obama. Elections have consequences. Elections have consequences. It sucks for the people who lose. It doesn't make you a dictator. See, one of the things that they've done for so long, and they've done it to America as a whole, and they've done it to Republican politicians, is convince us not to use the full expanse of our powers, right? You know, presidents, well, you can't do that. You can't send somebody in to look at USAID. Why, that you just can't do that. You'll murder millions of people around the globe. Now, I got to tell you, I'm very tired of seeing reports. Millions are going to die because Ecuadorian transgender dance troops aren't getting, their full funding. It's just stupid. I don't think it's working with the American people. Actually, Trump's approval ratings on cutting government stuff are very high. His overall approval rating is about as high as it's ever been. So people are actually behind him. But the idea that you know, oh, well, Trump's going to cut US AID and, you know, millions are going to die. And all I can think of is, well, you know, I have several questions. Aren't there other countries out there? There's Europe. Europe's always piping up about how important it is. It's got a checkbook. Write a check. China, you know, China's very rich. If, you know, if it's not us, you know, supporting this, you know, vital program that without which, you know, 500,000 people in Africa are going to vanish tomorrow, why don't China write a check? No, it's America. And if you don't do it, they're all going to die tomorrow. And I'm thinking, we've been doing this for 80 years, right? Since World War II, we have been supporting other countries, giving them this foreign aid. And if we cut it off after 80 years, if we cut it off tomorrow, everybody dies. What the foo have you been building? Have you even been building your own little medical infrastructure? Well, the answer is no. Why would they build their own infrastructure? We keep writing them checks. What's the incentive to get better? They steal half the money, right? Anyway, okay, if you're the president of Gabon, why are you rich? Okay, you should have a slightly better hut than the rest of the people of Gabon. Okay, they get it because they steal this money that dumb first world people give to them. And of course, look, they're not stupid. They know if America's going to pay for everything, why the hell should we build an infrastructure to take care of our own people? Freaking Americans are going to write us a check. USAID is going to give us money. This is not a good thing. And there's never an answer to that. It's always, well, you're going to murder millions of people. You're literally Hitler. You love Putin. You're a transphobe. And it just doesn't work anymore. A, no one cares if you call him racist anymore. No one cares if you call him Hitler. No one cares if you say they love Putin. And of course, there's nothing I love better. Guy who was literally in the Cold War, who has a NATO medal, being told how much I love the Russians by some human dildo who is out marching for the KGB-sponsored nuclear freeze while I was shivering in a fighting position outside of Stuttgart in 1988. Okay? Don't need it. Not interested in your newfound desire to confront the bear from back here in America behind your keyboard. You know, this Ukraine thing was supposed to be part of the friction. Ukraine thing was supposed to slow Trump down. Have these people met actual Americans? Normal Americans are like, okay, A, I don't understand this fight. I think Russia's wrong because they invaded them. That's a correct analysis. Russia shouldn't have invaded them. But, you know, there's a lot more going on than Putin's a bad man and Zelensky's a good man. It's good versus evil. It's that cliche crap again, right? That I mentioned before, where you substitute this childish bullshit for actual thought and analysis. Okay, Russia's fraught relationship with Ukraine goes back 1,000 years, and that's before all the Mongols and everything were involved. Actually, maybe were the Mongols involved in there? Yeah, they're in there. There's a lot going on there that we don't get. You know, and again, I went and trained Ukraine. I like Ukraine. I wish Ukrainians could win the war. I just don't think they can because, you know, I have a basic knowledge of military stuff and I can read a map, which apparently many of the geniuses in our garbage establishment can't do. But if you look at the areas of Ukraine that have been taken over by Russia, those are majority ethnic Russians. Okay, ethnic Russians and ethnic Ukrainians are very different. They don't like each other. I remember when we went over there, we had a couple Ukrainian speakers because that was more of a boutique language. This was late 90s through 2010 or 2009. I think 2008 or 9 was the last time I went over. We had a lot of Russian speakers because, you know, coming out of the Cold War, you had a lot of Russian linguists in the military, our intelligence guys and stuff. So we go over there, and our Ukrainian guys in the chat, like, nah, 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 nah. Yeah, dosvidanya, gotcha, all that crap. I think that's actually Russian. And then the Russians would speak, and the Ukrainians would get pissed off. Ukrainians would be like angry. that you're speaking Russian to. Now, they all knew Russian, right? They'd all been in the Russian army back when the Soviet Union was still a thing. They all knew Russian. They didn't like it because they didn't like Russians. Ukrainians didn't like Russians. Now, I'm not judging that. I think the Ukrainians have a lot of good reason not to like Russians. But the fact is, Ukrainians don't like Russian. There is ethnic problems there that you don't hear about. It's all Putin bad, Zelensky good. I'll give you Putin's bad, okay? He's not crazy, though. He's got reasons for doing the things he's doing. Now, the reasons to us are incomprehensible. Well, you know, in 1528, the Knights of Vladislava, fought a battle, and you're like, what the hell are you talking about? Okay, I don't understand any of this. Well, Putin does. Russians do. Ukrainians do. They understand their whole freaking history. And there is a whole history there. And again, I'm not pro-Russian. It's not pro-Russian to say, understand what your enemy's thinking. That's like Army 101. We actually have a guy, the S2, who's in on every staff, the S2 or G2 if you get up to a general level command, whose entire job is to tell you what the enemy's thinking, right? If you don't understand the enemy, how are you going to fight him? It's basic stuff. We don't seem to do it. We see, in fact, if you try and understand the enemy, if you say something like, well, you know, Putin believes Russia has land claims to Crimea. Well, he does think Russia has land claims to Crimea. He does. I'm not saying they're right. I'm not saying they're just or valid. I'm saying he thinks they've got them. No, you love Putin. By pointing out that obvious and very important fact, you love Putin. No, you freaking retard. I don't love Putin. Okay? I love objective analysis of evidence so that I can come up with a good answer and a good policy instead of one based on a childlike notion that Putin bad, Zelensky good. Okay? Lots of bad people in the world. You got to deal with them. Okay? And not a whole lot of people who are unalloyed good. All right? Zelensky's got his problems. Everyone says a lot of people say he's corrupt. I don't know if he's corrupt or not. I do know he's trying to do what he thinks is right for Ukraine. And the problem is, it's not necessarily what's right for America. He's also taking advice from people who, frankly, are idiots. And he's stupid for taking their advice. When you take their go in and get in Trump's face. Who the fuck thinks it's ever a good idea to go in front of Trump's face? You know, this thing called diplomacy, it implies that you're going to be diplomatic. That, you know why diplomats are traditionally polite? Because they don't want to introduce the variable of emotion unnecessarily into a negotiation. Oh my gosh, when I was a lawyer doing that full time, and we would be negotiating, say somebody's family had been killed in a horrible accident, right? The last thing you wanted to do was get all the parties together, right? Because the family's very emotional about it. They have a right to be, they should be, but that's not going to help get the deal done. Especially, you're terrible, your truck was out of order and you didn't maintain it, and you're a terrible person for running us over and blah, blah, blah. And that may all be true. It doesn't help. So we often get a mediator and keep the parties apart. And you send the mediator from room to room so the parties don't freaking kill each other. Whoever told Zelensky, go in there, be an asshole in front of the cameras to Trump advance. It'll work great. Who's giving that advice? Okay? And Trump's like the ultimate, I want to make a deal guy. He wants to come out and say, I've made a great deal. Make a great deal with it, dumbass. He wants the deal. Make the deal. You're not gonna big time him. You're not gonna high hat him. It's not gonna work. I'm telling you. I shouldn't have to tell you. You're the president, sort of. You know, and all the Europeans are so blinded by their hatred of Trump, which is really hatred of normal Americans. They love the globalist Americans, the ones whose, you know, time in Europe has been, well, I've been to Berlin. And Barcelona,
and London and Paris. I know Europe.
Okay. No. No. You know, I lived in Europe for like 3-4 years. 5 years, something like that. Okay. I understand a little about Europe. And, you know, the European bigwigs do not like normal Americans. They think we're uppity. They're envious because they used to have power and they used to matter, and now they manifestly don't. I do love their new thing, which is I'm really going to show Trump. He wants us to undertake our own defense and increase our support for Ukraine. So we're going to really show him we're going to undertake our own defense and really increase our support to Ukraine. Take that, Donald Trump. Oh my God, they're the worst people. I mean, they're just so terrible. And they're, you know, they talk a big game, and you know, more Ukrainian and more Russian guys die. And it's very cynical, it's very ugly, and it's very stupid. And I'm tired of it. But all this stuff kind of, you know, comes together against Trump. It's people, you know, trying to create fiction with this lawfare, with this Ukraine stuff, with tariffs. Everything's there to slow him down. The problem for them is Donald J. Trump's a perpetual motion machine. He's full of energy. He's full of focus. And he's pissed off because they tried to throw him in jail for the rest of his life. They tried to bankrupt him and they tried to murder him. And he's going to get some payback. Okay, man. Nobody, like, there's nobody out there who more than Trump epitomizes, if you're going to swing at the king, you better get him, because they didn't. Anyway, that's my unredacted for this week. Hope you like it. Follow me on Twitter at Kurt Schlichter. Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday are my columns. Wednesday is the one that talks a little more in detail about friction. I think you'll like it. And go get my books, The Attack and the Kelly Turnbull novels. There's a Kelly Turnbull graphic novel coming out, and I'll have another book next year. And Arena and I are working on our first book together, Los Angeles, which should be coming soon. We've been working hard on that, and it's a lot of fun. So anyway, thank you all very much for being VIP members. Consider becoming a Platinum VIP member. We're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff in 2025, and I hope to see you there. Bye-bye.